Today on the show, we saddle up for one last ride. Welcome to Lore Party, the podcast that explores the stories, characters, and universes of our favorite video games. I'm Kevin.
And I'm Jaden.
So today on the show, we are going to talk about Episode 1, Kenobi.
It is finally here. We finally get to talk about Kenobi. What a long, strange journey it has been to get to this show with COVID and with rewrites and with all the other craziness of Hollywood. We finally got the show, and I think it delivers in its first couple episodes. We're only going to be talking about episode one, though, today, and then hopefully we'll get another episode out soon.
And I will say, I'll start this off by saying, the last episode we did, just kind of briefly talking about Kenobi, remember, this universe that is created through with this show and all the stuff on Disney, it is a accumulation of stories and data, if you will, of little story bites that have been adapted into not just this show but other shows. So again, you have people like Dave Filoni. He didn't direct this one, but I know he was a consultant for this show. I know the director
yes.
definitely used him as a consultant and has stated like he kind of like a offshoot producer, if you will, because she just kept calling him over and over again, asking for consulting on the story and the characters and everything. So just keep in mind, this is all new. It's not going to be based off of one specific storyline. It is kind of a hodgepodge of a bunch of stuff that we all care about and the creators cared about.
Absolutely. And before we get to all that, though, we got to do our housework. So
yes.
We'd love to hear from you guys, our listeners. So please, if you feel like you got something you want to say to us, email us at podcast@loreparty.com with your thoughts and also your episode ideas. We're planning on doing a lot more Star Wars content in our future. So if there's something that you would love to hear an episode about relating to any of the television shows that you can find on Disney Plus, please let us know. We're definitely looking to ramp up some more of those episodes in the future. You can also watch some of our streams over at twitch.tv/loreparty. And of course, you can always connect with us on Instagram and Twitter @lore_party. Please shout your deranged Star Wars theories at me. I love hearing them.
I just like hearing you talk about them.
Yes, absolutely. I will go on tangents that we have to cut because they'll be too long. But before we do all that, we want to get into a quick word from our sponsors, and then we will dive into our first recap of Episode 1 of Kenobi. Okay, we are back, and I think that this episode starts off with my favorite thing that Dave Filoni loves to do, which is torture people by making them watch Order 66 over and over again. We get to see this beautiful shot of Coruscant where everything's all quiet, and there's some Jedi younglings practicing to use the Force, and then all of a sudden the door just explodes, and there are clone troopers just firing wildly into the room full of children. And I know some people were talking smack about this sequence, but I actually really liked the coordination and the effect of following them. It was like a one-way hallway shot.
Yeah.
And also something kind of cool, we're starting to see more clone troopers who are in real life. They're not CGI'd. A fun fact, the clone troopers in Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith, they were all CGI'd. Every once in a while, maybe they would have like someone take off a helmet that might have been real, but for the most part, the majority of clone troopers that we see in Medium are CGI. In fact, people even point out that the helmets are a little bit small to actually fit on a human head. That's why sometimes the clone troopers you see at like conventions, their bodies look a little weird. It's because they had to actually make the helmets fit for a human to wear.
I did also notice during the shot sequence, it was really nice and steady. And then as soon as the door opens with the clone troopers, the camera just starts shaking like an old school, earthquake.
Someone was like, oh shit, there's the wiggle option in After Effects. Let me just click that on real quick.
So that whole sequence, we follow these kids that are just like being protected by their Jedi Master, right? That's a master. Would you say that's a their Jedi Master?
Yeah, she was an instructor. She wasn't necessarily a master, but she was their instructor at the time. Yeah. We see Yoda teaching in that very room in episode 2.
Yeah, and so we see that this Jedi gets taken down eventually on the bridge, where apparently a lot of them got taken down on bridges. You just see them all on the bridges. And in all the sequences I've ever seen, they always die like on a bridge or something. And what happens is these kids kind of look at the body and go, we got to go. We got to get out of here. And we see all these children, like what, 6 or 7 of them, 8, something like that. They all run. And then all of a sudden, cut.
Yep. You cut 10 years later, and there's a big scary ship landing in the middle of a desert town on the planet Tatooine. The Empire loves their big scary ships. And it opens to reveal 3 Inquisitors. And these are newer ideas from the new canon that Disney set up. They are Jedi hunter killers, basically. Most of them themselves are former Jedi who Palpatine, I guess since they didn't die in the original wave, was like, maybe I can use them. So he's like, hey, do you want a job? It involves me horribly torturing you. And if you say no, I murder you.
Yeah. If you guys have played Jedi Fallen Order, it's the main villain that is always after Cal Kestis is an Inquisitor.
Yep. And so we come to find out that these Inquisitors have actually arrived on Tatooine hunting for Jedi. Not the Jedi that we're all thinking. A different Jedi. Which I actually was like, oh my god, are we going to have them fight Kenobi right away? And I was like, no, actually they're looking for, I assume this guy, he kind of reminds me of Cal Kestis a little bit.
Yeah.
He's just a kid just hanging out at the bar. Because I guess he had saw them going through trouble, so that he intervened and helped. The Grand Inquisitor, who steps forward, and you'll actually know him from Rebels, if you've watched Rebels, he comes up and he's like, Jedi cannot help what they are. You know, this Jedi stepped in and did what he's supposed to do, be a good citizen of the galaxy, you know, saved this guy from help, but it exposed him, because word travels fast, even in the Outer Rim.
And it's really cool the way they kind of trick, I don't want to say trick, but force the Jedi to show up is, they are intimidating with everybody in this bar, the saloon, and they're at the saloon person who owns it, the owner, and Grand Inquisitor's in his face, and he's like, oh, I tells a story of like a Jedi, like, oh, you maybe had somebody come into your saloon, and you maybe helped them, they helped you, and you gave them a bed, and he just like goes through this story of how this Jedi probably showed up, and then Reva kind of gets annoyed. Reva is one of the sisters. She is an Inquisitor. I believe she is. Is she second sister?
Third sister.
Third sister. That's right. Third sister. She's kind of fed up through this whole thing, and she just throws a knife at the innkeeper. Innkeeper, saloon owner, that guy.
The bar owner. Yeah, the bartender.
And all of a sudden, the knife stops right in his face. We see this Jedi who revealed himself. He's running around, jumping up and around all over the place in the bar, over tables and stuff. And they kind of surround him. And he tells them, like, it's pointless. You can't stop me.
You can't kill us all.
You can't kill us all. I'll always be a part of the Jedi Order. And the Jedi Order, you know, they're all going to be around and you can't stop us. Reva whips out the lightsaber and goes to just slice him in half. Like, doesn't give two shits and just goes to slice him in half. And then the blade is force stopped right on his arm, starts burning his arm, and he's like, ow, ow, ow. And the Grand Inquisitor stopped it. And then that lets this Jedi escape.
Yep. Reva's pissed about that.
Reva is pissed and gets up in the face of the Inquisitors and says, you know, we shouldn't be chasing after scraps. Scraps are all that's left, is what the Grand Inquisitor said.
Yeah, I love that exchange because when you think about it, you know, she's just going on hatred. She's just fueled with, I need to kill every Jedi
instinct,
I can find.
Instinct.
But the Grand Inquisitor is basically being like, listen, bro, we have to have a job at the end of the day. Like, they've been hunting Jedi for 10 years.
Yep.
And I mean, I assume it took them like a year to train to be Inquisitors, right? So imagine like 9 years. Yeah. But like, there's not many Jedi left at that point. Like, once they're all gone, there's no point in him being around. So he's trying to keep job security, man. They're like,
he wants to be employed.
Yeah, because she's like, let's go after Kenobi. And he's like, listen, man, Kenobi's why we have a job.
Yeah.
Because, like, if they bring in Kenobi, I don't think Vader's going to care anymore. He's just going to clean house with the Inquisitors.
Yeah. And so we see this Jedi escape, and obviously Reva's pissed. The Grand Inquisitor, though, kind of, when he says, scraps are all that is left. When they said that, I thought, oh shit, that means a lot of these Jedi are gone. Like, they found a lot of them in the last 10 years. They are totally fucked. So the Jedis are, according to the Inquisitors, they're not really there anymore. They're pretty much done. Any that survived, they were taken care of. And Reva goes on to just kind of talk about Kenobi, about how, I want Kenobi. We need to get Kenobi. Kenobi, 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 Kenobi. Kenobi! Like, that's just how it is. That's what I'm hearing at that.
Yep. Speaking of Kenobi, we then take a new little scene transition over to... I'm like, I love this idea. There was just a giant, like, space whale, space manta ray carcass.
Yeah. So I was like, wait, what is this thing?
Laying on its side, and then we pan over, and there's just people cutting meat out of it and, like, packaging it and processing it. And I was like, that's such a cool idea.
And I will say it looks like Play-Doh. Straight Play-Doh, it does look or like Play-Doh. Clay or something like that.
It looked like salmon, but too big to be salmon, which is what I was like, deliciously horrible.
Yes.
I'm a steak guy. I'm not a salmon guy, I'll be honest. And we pan over all these people, and then we see the man, the myth, the legend, Jesus Christ. I'm sorry, Obi-Wan Kenobi. A different savior figure in the desert.
There you go.
And he's part of the team. You know, he's carving up the meat, you know, making sure that it gets processed. And he's even slicing off little bits for himself, which I kind of like that idea, too. Is like, he's, you know, he's working that poor job, which is very typical of any of the Jedi that we see who actually survive the Purge. You know, they don't try to get the flashy government jobs anywhere. They're like, I am hunted, which Obi-Wan's even worse, I think, because he was like, you know, he was a Jedi master. His face is plastered over every...
A master, a general.
Yes. His face is plastered on every wall. Every fucking restaurant probably is like, hey, by the way, it's the Hunt for Kenobi is still on.
Yeah. And he's just doing normal stuff. He's got an average job. He goes up to the machine that they clock out of and they punch out. The guy in front of him gets kind of screwed over on his wage. And he says, hey, this is only half. And the boss man gets in front and says, what are you going to do about it? And he's like, oh, nothing. And he walks away. And then he just looks at Obi-Wan and he's like, and what are you going to do about it? And Obi-Wan just kind of stares at him, punches in, and then just walks away. But he's doing normal stuff. He's going to work. He's taking the bus back to town. He's just, you know, he's feeding his pet. He has, how do you pronounce his pet name again? It's a,
I believe it's Eopie.
Eopie?
It's the weird, pink, it looks like a naked mole rat with giant legs.
It's very, very weird looking. It's cute, but it's weird. And he brings this meat that he's kind of stealing, and he's bringing it to his little Eopi thing. And we just see him going home. He rides on this, like, camel Eopi, and he goes into a cave. And when he gets into the cave, though, when he walks outside, it's really interesting. It kind of looks like the head of, R2 or an R2 unit where like the little
his little sensor pops
The little sensor that pops up off of the R2 units, and he sees it come out of the sand and it flashes green, which is like, okay, everything's all good, you can go inside. So he goes inside, he goes into his cave. He's like, he's living the cave luxury, the desert luxury. Come on, he's got his own place. He's got
shade. I will say, as far as caves go, it's actually a pretty nice cave.
It's a pretty nice
place.
Not
gonna lie. You know, you put in a pool table in there and a surround sound system. You'd be set. He'd have all the parties he could want, but of course that's the problem.
It's also huge. Like it's a big cave,
man.
And he's got like a lot of space. And so he ends up going in there, puts his money away. He's got some boxes that they kind of zoom in on and then like pan away slowly, because you're like, ooh, what's in there? You think it's like a lightsaber or something. He makes some weird looking grub that kind of like it oozes and like grows out.
It reminds me of The Force Awakens when Rey makes her meal. It kind of bubbles out of nothingness.
Yeah, that's kind of what it was. And then he sits outside and he's eating his grub, just hanging out, looking at the desert beach thing. Desert. It's just all sand. Let's be real. Mm-hmm. So then, all of a sudden, a Jawa shows up. Now, to my knowledge, live action, this is the first time we ever have a Jawa subtitle. We do not have another character repeating what they say again. We have a subtitle for a Jawa.
That was interesting.
I know that sounds stupid and corny, but I was like, oh my god! I thought it was cool.
Yeah, you texted me that. You're like, oh my god, he's doing this. And I was like, oh, that is really weird. You're right. That's such a change. Because not most of the time, like barring like Jabba the Hutt, like the majority of the time, if you don't know the alien's language, they don't tell you what it is.
Yeah.
Which I always kind of, I thought that was a nice flavor of the Star Wars universe, a little bit of realism in there, where it's like, you know, I don't necessarily know what Portuguese people are saying if they were to converse with me. So, yeah, that would make sense that I wouldn't know.
We just go off of the characters that already understand it and their reactions.
Yeah.
Sometimes, again, they'll repeat it out loud, and we will kind of, but also you'll get the gist of, like, you know, the Jawa's yelling or something.
Well, because, like when Han's talking to Chewie, and Chewie's like, bro, he's like, oh, yeah, me too, Chewie. It's like, oh, so he said something that was, like, sarcastic.
Yeah, exactly. And so he's talking to this Jawa named Tika. He's selling Obi-Wan this stuff, and he shows Obi-Wan a belt that is found from a Jedi ship that they found a while back, that they scrapped the ship and they found this belt, and he examines it. I don't know if it's his. We don't really know if it's his. It's kind of assumed either it's his or it's this other Jedi that
we saw earlier.
And Tika is like, you want it? He's like, no, I'm good. And he says, okay. And then he goes, oh, do you need anything else? And he goes, oh, I need a processor. It was stolen earlier for my, I think it was his water, like, collector.
His water collector, yeah.
Yeah, and Tika's like, oh, I got one of those. And he looks at it and he goes, Tika, if you're going to steal my parts and sell them back to me, you could at least clean them first. And the Jawa's like, Tika's like, Whoa, that cleaning costs extra, man. Hey, man,
cleaning costs extra.
I gotta feed a family here. It's really funny.
I got a tribe to feed. That's so great.
It was so
Jawas
funny.
Jawas are such swindlers. I love it.
And so he gets his processor back, and then he finds a toy. Tika brought a toy that apparently Obi-Wan, I guess, requested previously, and so he says, hey, I got this toy. And it's of a ship. I don't think it's an Empire ship, but it's pre-Empire, but it is, it's, I think it's like a clone ship, like one that, like a, the one that like a episode 2 Yoda was on, I think.
As far as what I know is, it is actually called what's called a Skyhopper. It's what the kids like to fly around on Tatooine and shoot the Womp Rats with.
Oh, that's what it was. Okay, I thought it was what Yoda was on in episode 2 with clones.
No. That's
similar-ish, but.
Yeah, they look very, I think they might even be developed by the same company. But very similar things. But so, it's also the same toy that we see Luke playing with in episode 4, A New Hope.
Oh! Gee, I wonder how it got there. Well, guess what? We're going to tell you. We're going to show you. They show it. He goes in the middle of the night. Kenobi goes to the house where Luke Skywalker lives. Drops off the toy.
Spends some time peeping on them, watching them from a cave.
He goes and he's hanging out outside of the house, like up on the ridge, and is like watching Luke working with his uncle, and his uncle's like, oh, hey, Luke, go get me this thing. And he's like, okay. And he runs away, but doesn't go get it, just disappears, and then jumps on the opposite end of the house. And he starts playing like he's like, you know, piloting
a ship
or something like that. And Obi-Wan kind of like smirks a bit and then kind of just gets, I don't want to say serious, but like it kind of disappears. And he's like looking at it because it reminds him of Anakin, like obviously.
Yeah.
And so he brings this toy and drops the toy off in the middle of the night outside the house. And it was cute. I loved it. I thought it was a really nice sequence. Then Kenobi, as he's walking home at nighttime, well, he's not walking. His little thing, what is it called? I forget what it is.
Eopie. How dare you?
Eopie. It's cute, okay? He's riding his Eopie, and we get this weird shot like he's being watched, and you're like, oh, shit, what's going on? And then the Jedi from earlier shows up and recognizes him and is like, oh, my God, master.
Which I love that because Obi-Wan's immediately like, my name is Ben. Who the fuck are you? Like, shut up. I'm not who you think I am.
He's very much like, bro, shut up. You're probably being followed. You want both of us to die. Like, very obviously insinuating, like, shut the fuck up,
which
dude.
I feel so bad because this little Jedi, I don't want to say little Jedi kid, but it's like he's probably, you know,
he's like
20-something. Yeah, like, he's just like, oh my god, I'm so glad that I found you, master. Look, I have a lightsaber. Together we can do this. And Obi-Wan looks at him and is like, you take that fucking thing and you bury it. You want to live? You bury that fucking thing and you run.
And he's like, the Jedi, the time of the Jedi is over. And he says, like, we lost, dude. Like, we lost the fight. Like, it's over.
Yeah.
Stop.
Which it's I feel so bad for Obi-Wan in this moment because like you know he wants to help that kid.
Oh, totally. Totally.
Like he wants to help that kid and he wanted to help that guy before at the meat market. Like
yeah.
he wants
yeah.
to help these people, but he knows that to stay alive he can't. His job is way more important.
Not just to stay alive, but to actually do the mission.
Yeah, his mission is to protect Luke. He is working on the last mission of the Jedi Order.
Yeah.
Which, to which someone might go, well, how, you know, why that guy could come and help, and then there'd be two Jedi watching. It's like, Obi-Wan's like, absolutely not. Like, he knows this kid is being hunted.
There is a sequence in this episode where Obi-Wan is sleeping, and I thought it was going to be the sequence that we talked about in our last Kenobi episode.
Yes.
But it was kind of almost like a recap-ish in his mind of everything that was going on prior. And
yeah.
he is a broken man. And that's the thing. When we talked in the last episode about, like, is he doing it for the mission? Is he doing it because he feels bad? I really think that this is him doing it because he gives a shit about Anakin. Like, I am convinced now that he's doing it not just because of the Jedi. Because this sequence that we just talked about, him saying, it's over, bro. Like, it's done. We lost. Yep. Bury that shit. Like, Jedi are out. Like, that's it, man. That convinced me, from what we spoke about in our last episode, he is doing it because of Anakin, because of his love for his brother, basically.
I think it's a combination of that and the guilt. Everything
mm-hmm.
that we talked
Correct.
About last episode, you know, all coming into one big pile of horrible PTSD that Obi-Wan is clearly suffering from because
yeah.
he can't sleep.
Hardcore.
Yep. And it doesn't really help that the next day, you know, he does his normal stuff. You know, he goes to the meat market. He cuts off a piece for his EOP. He gives it to him. But as he's about to leave to go home, the bag with the toy in it just gets thrown at his fucking feet. It's our good friend Owen Lars, Luke's uncle. He just shows up and he's like, what the hell are you doing, Obi-Wan? No, he doesn't call him Obi-Wan. He just says, Ben. He's like, what the hell are you doing, Ben? He's like, what? It's just a toy. It's like, it means something. Like, don't do that. I told you to stay away from us. And then he goes, you know, well, how is the boy doing? And Ben's like, Owen's like, you don't care. You just want to know if he's showing. Because that's the big fear, I think, in Uncle Owen's mind, is that he's like, I am terrified of the day that Luke becomes a Jedi because it destroyed his family.
Yeah.
You know, you got to remember, the last time that Owen Lars saw a Jedi, it was Anakin Skywalker coming home and bringing his dead mother home.
And killing and murdering an entire tribe of sand people.
Yeah, well, he was probably grateful for that part. He probably didn't care about that part. They don't really have a best relationship with those guys.
Well, yeah, but, I mean, he must.
Yeah.
Children.
Now that we've seen Book of Boba Fett, we like Tusken Raiders a little
more, right?
I think.
Yeah.
That really humanized the audience to them a little
True.
Bit. Getting back to it, Obi-Wan's just like, listen, yeah, if he's showing, he has to be trained. And Owen fires back the best line of the entire show so far, in my opinion. He goes, oh, he must be trained? Oh, like you trained his father?
Oh, man.
It's
Burn.
Been in so many memes, and I love the memes so much.
The boy must be trained. And he's like, oh, like you trained his father.
Trained
huh?
his father?
It's like, oh.
The one who fucking killed everyone?
The one who, you know, is a piece of shit and caused all this stuff. And it's like, ooh. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Owen's ready to leave it at that, and he starts to leave, and in the worst case of timing ever, the other two Inquisitors show up. Sans the Grand Inquisitor, he's not there. It's Third Sister, and then the other, I don't remember what the other one's designation
I don't think we
is.
Had a name for that
one. Yeah, but they're walking around, and they're yelling at the civilians. They're like, you know, give us, we know the Jedi's here, we're hunting one, if anyone knows of anything, you gotta give them up. And she immediately, like, locks in on Owen and is like, hey, you know something. This guy knows where a Jedi is.
Well, it's weird because what happens is she walks around and she's like screaming demands and stuff. And then she's like, the moment you reach for something, you're going to lose a head. And then every time you reach for something, you'll know about me and you'll think about me. And she
she's having a big old power trip.
Dude, she cuts an old woman's hand off like, boom,
yeah,
right
she
away.
Did.
And I was like, oh,
which,
shit.
That was the quietest old woman ever after her
oh,
hand got cut
oh,
off, I'm
bro,
gonna be honest.
Bro, that was brutal. And then then Owen is just kind of standing there, and he's just, like, staring at her. And that's when she's like, oh, you know some shit. And he's just like, yeah. I hate Jedi.
You got a family, Owen? Got a wife and kids that I can kill? And he's like,
He says how Jedi are vermin, and we take care of vermin. You know, like, we kill vermin on my farm. And she's like, oh, really?
I love that sequence, because it's not exactly... He's saying that he hates Jedi, and it's not a lie.
It's not at all.
He fucking hates them.
But for some reason, she, like, gets in his face and is like, oh, yeah? So you protect your family from Jedi? Do you think you could protect your family from me? And I'm like, bro, he's agreeing with you. Why are you so mad at him? Yeah. He literally is agreeing with you.
It's so funny because she's so shitty that the other Inquisitor is like, hey, we gotta go.
Yeah, she gets in his face and says, if nobody tells me where the Jedi is, this man and his family will die. Like, I'm going to kill them. And it gets to where she's about to kill Owen. And she's gonna whip out the lightsaber and kill him. And the other Inquisitor is like, okay, that's enough. All right, tell us where he is. And he uses that as a medium to get her to stop, which was pretty cool. It was very interesting to see this sequence after, because he just pushes her up against a wall and is like, you need to fucking quit it. Enough with this Kenobi bullshit. You are going to ruin everything for everybody. Do your damn job and stop.
I think the other thing, too, is that the Inquisitors are walking, like, a very fine line, at least evidenced by the way this Inquisitor reacts to her being such a dick, because I think that they don't have as much free reign as they would like. I mean, you gotta remember, the Inquisitors are in a very interesting spot, because the Sith have that rule of two, you know, there can only be one master, one apprentice. These guys are not Sith. They are dark side users.
Correct.
And I think, honestly, if they show any ambition beyond, like, their simple order, I think Vader and Sidious would take that as a direct fucking threat, and they would end them immediately.
Absolutely. So
that's why that guy's like, because, you know, like word would spread quickly, the same way with the Jedi. You know, like, a Jedi uses his lightsaber to defend someone, that's going to get traveled around. A guy with a red lightsaber who killed an entire town... that's going to get spread around, too.
Absolutely. And I think that's why the Grand Inquisitor is also like, check yourself. Because I don't think the Grand Inquisitor is just annoyed at her for doing stuff just in general. I think he's worried that it's going to cause a problem for him, not just job security, but also, like, yo, if you do this shit, they're just going to fucking wipe us all out, and they don't give a crap anymore, because we've already done our job, essentially.
They are tools. They are tools in this scenario. They're not human. They're not creatures. They're not human beings, or alien beings in his case.
So after this sequence, right before it goes away, it cuts away, we see Obi-Wan kind of like look at Owen and is like, oh my God, like, thank you. Thank you for not giving me up, blah, blah, blah. And Owen just looks at him and goes, I didn't do it for you, which is obvious. He did it for Luke.
Which was, I just thought that was incredible. It really gives a nice depth to Owen Lars as a character. Because, we didn't really know when you first meet him in The New Hope, like, why he's so grouchy and, like, curmudgeonly. It's like, now you know. It's like, hey, he's been putting up with this Jedi shit on the sidelines for, you know, Luke's entire life, basically.
Yeah. And then, all of a sudden, we go somewhere else that I did not Colorado. No, that's what it looked like.
Yeah.
That's what it looked like.
Space.
Space Denver.
Space Denver. Listen, if Denver's that pretty, I'm going, man, it was gorgeous. We ended up on the planet Alderaan. Obviously, pre-A New Hope.
Definitely, definitely pre-A New Hope.
Some assembly not required, because it's still in it's still in mint condition.
The new Lego Star Wars exploding action,
complete with Leia crying. No,
oh no.
Yeah, we end up on Alderaan, and we see like this this young woman being like prepared for what is maybe like a state function or a dinner. You know, they got the servants who are putting the cloak on them and putting the hair comb in and doing all that stuff. And, I mean, we all assume it's Leia, honestly. We're all like, yeah, it's probably Leia because it's Alderaan. Like, this is exactly what it is. The queen walks in. It's like, all right, little girl, let's go. Grabs the girl's hand, and it's just a different alien sibling. I guess different person. And she's like, she thought you'd think it was funny, Your Highness.
I thought that was hilarious.
Oh, that was so good. I was like, that was a great way to, and then the queen's just immediately like, she's either in the kitchen, the cellars, or in the woods.
Yep. I had fun with that sequence. I thought it was cute. It was obviously who you were expecting, and yeah. It was a very, like, complete difference from Luke. It was really cool to see how Luke was just on the desert, man, just being a farm kid, and then all of a sudden, we get this princess, you know? I thought yeah. It was really cool, because it's so interesting to see how they mirror their parents.
Yeah, well, in the same time, like, they're both, you know, a galaxy away, they're both doing the exact same thing. They're supposed to be doing chores, but they're running off and playing instead.
Of course.
Luke's just jumping on and flying his speeder, whereas she's running off into the woods with her robot friend to go look at spaceships.
Can we please talk about that droid? Because, oh my god, was it adorable.
It's a very cool droid. That's a very cool idea for a droid.
I thought it was adorable.
It's funny that really would track too, because she's growing up in a core world where there's a lot more technology.
Mm-hmm.
So of course she'd have a droid companion. They didn't get messed up by the Clone Wars as much. You know, that's why we see that the anti-droid sentiment in A New Hope, where they're like, "You're droids. We don't serve their kind here. Get them out of here."
Yeah.
Like, there's still some droid racism in the Outer Rim. So they finally eventually catch up to her, the royal guards and the queen do, and they convince her to, like, come to this state function that she has to be a part of. And she meets her cousin, who's just your typical bureaucrat, you know, being a snobby rich kid, saying, "Oh, you're not even an Organa." And then she just destroys him. Like, there's the Padme. Like, we saw the Anakin in the first sequence with her, and then we see the Padme.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a really cool sequence to see. To see her kind of almost, at first she says hi, and she doesn't like that. She said, tells her mom, she's like, "Oh, I don't like to just wave. Like, I want to do something. I want to talk to people. I want to help them. I can't even leave this planet." And her cousin shows up. She's like, "Hi, cousin." And he just kind of is like, "Hi." And then they're at this, like, dinner thing. Mind you, also, the actors, it's the same actor who played Owen, but it's also the same actor for Organa. And that was really cool to see them being the same characters. I thought that was cool. I liked that.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's Jimmy Smits, man. He was in Rogue One, too.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it was just cool. I thought it was awesome. And we go to this party, and Organa is saying, like, "I want to focus on, like, you know, slave labor. We shouldn't be having slave labor." And he's talking politics. He's like, "We shouldn't do, you know, the good stuff." He's obviously a good person. And his cousin, who's also a senator, I guess, because he's still a senator.
Well, so the interesting thing about him is that he's married to the queen, but he is not royalty himself.
Yes.
And the whole thing is that the Jedi temple attack, they were targeting the Jedi specifically.
Mm-hmm.
And this is at the time period where the Empire doesn't have, like, it has control, but it doesn't have complete control.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a scene in episode 4, A New Hope, when, you know, they say the Imperial Senate has been swept away. You know, we're starting the new government. The Imperial Senate was still important to maintain the bureaucracy of mm-hmm. government. They still needed them there to, like, manage the individual planets because they didn't have the infrastructure to replace it. So, right. You know, I'm sure they wanted to get rid of Bail, but they were like, they needed to come up with a good reason.
Yeah.
Because he was one of the most popular senators during the Clone Wars. So if that guy just disappears, people ask questions. And I think the Emperor just weighed the options of, like, well, he hasn't done anything outright treasonous, and Alderaan is, like, one of the most popular core worlds. So let's not... It's easier for me to watch him and, like, keep an eye on him.
Yeah.
Which they do a terrible job, as we see later. But hey.
Yeah. So he's at this dinner party that he's hosting. He's talking politics, and he's obviously being a good person. His cousin's like, "Look, I didn't come here to talk politics. I came here to eat your food and to hang out." So he's like, "Oh, well, okay." And then Leia's cousin shows up and is, like, telling her, you know, how she sucks and she's not a real Organa and how she should just shut up. Because she says thank you to her droid. Because the droid gives her something. She goes, "Oh, thank you." And he goes, "You say thank you to a lower life form?" And she's like, "Well, yeah, it's polite."
Fun fact, though, that droid is voiced by the same voice actors who voices Leia in the Lego Star Wars
I may or
games.
May not follow her on Twitter. All my friends may or may not follow her on Twitter as a voice actor. But yes, so there's a lot of really fun Easter eggs in this episode. What's really cool is after her cousin insults her, it's very obvious Leia uses the Force, kind of mind read him, and says like all this shit that he's thinking about how he's scared. He mimics his dad even though he doesn't know what he's saying and all this other shit, like just completely decimates him and just leaves him sitting there.
You know what's funny? I don't even know if she used the Force for it. She might just be that good. I mean, look at her pedigree. You know, she's the daughter of Padme Amidala, who's being raised by Bail Organa. You know, it's like she might just be that politically savvy even now, which I honestly think would be even more impressive than her using the Force. I mean, that might even play a factor into it. But the fact that she was just like, "You're scared. You're a little loser boy." And he's like, "Well, you're not even a real Organa." And he runs away.
It was pretty cool to see.
Yeah, and that's where Bail, you know, has to pull her aside and be like, "Hey, you can't just shit stomp your little cousin like that, or your big cousin like that." And she's like, "Well, he was being mean to me. He was being rude to droids," which I'm like, "Oh, that's adorable."
I know, right?
And he's like, "You know what? Listen, you know," she's like, "He told me I wasn't even Organa." He's like, "Listen, you are absolutely my child. You are in all that matters. You are my kid. Now let's go apologize." And she's like, "Okay, daddy, absolutely." Immediately runs back out into the woods. Immediately says, "F that, I'm gonna go have some fun." The problem is, this time doesn't go as smoothly.
This time, we get one of the best cameos of a character, person, actor. I screamed out loud. Flea! I was so pumped! Flea! Fucking Flea, man! Dude! Red Hot Chili Peppers are in Star Wars now, like, let's go.
Such a weird.
I loved it.
Position, man. But that's, yeah, it's kind of fun. Which, by the way, again, that's not the first time that band people like musicians are put into place in Star Wars. There's lot of that apparently.
Oh yeah.
Which I was like, all right. So she runs into three guys who are there to kidnap her.
We've seen Flea stalking her in the woods in the last season.
Yeah,
we
saw like the back of his head.
Yeah.
He sprung his trap. You know, everybody else who's in a position of power is off doing their state function, so now they can strike. And we get to probably the thing people have complained about the most is that is the chase sequence when they're trying to capture her. You know, she's running through the woods, she's bobbing and weaving, and these guys can't seem to catch her. I'm like, man, I was like, I thought it was cool, but then people pointed out like, it was really hard for them to catch a little girl running not so fast through the woods. And I was like, all right, that's fine, I guess.
Yeah, it was pretty interesting to watch a little kid run around and see the camera not able to follow. It was filmed really awkwardly. And
yeah, they could have tightened up a couple of shots to make the action a little bit more intense on that. But I guess.
And it was a pretty quick.
It was a pretty quick sequence, which ends in Leia getting captured by these guys. Back on Tatooine, Obi-Wan gets a phone call, gets his little comm link, dings, and he pulls it out.
And it's in one of those chests that we had a little zoom in on earlier.
Yeah, it wasn't his lightsaber like everyone thought. It was just his communicator, and it's Bail and the Queen, and they basically say, "Hey, you know, she's gone. We need help." And I loved what Bail even says, because Obi-Wan is initially like, "Listen, man, I can't, you know, get a bounty hunter, send in the army." And they're like, "No, we can't get this out. You know, no one can know what she is or who she is." And he's like, "I have a mission to protect the boy." And Bail just fires back, "Why? She is just as important." Which I'm like, yeah, absolutely. 100%. Yeah. I definitely think this was not the person he was expecting to go after rescue. He even says like, "I'm not the man I used to be." He's like, "It's been 10 years since I left this planet." But so he refuses. He's like, "Find somebody else. I'm not going to do it. I can't do it." He's scared. Honestly, I think this is the first time we see Obi-Wan actually scared.
That's when he has that like dream sequence. I think right after that, he gets all like, and he's obviously having trouble sleeping. He goes through his day again. This time though, when he gets to the square in town,
he sees that young Jedi that he refused to help hanging by cords. I noticed it wasn't an actual hanging, because this is Disney, and I don't think they wanted to risk that. Yep, I was like, oh, okay, Disney. All right. Yeah, his arms and legs are bound, and there's no visible wounds on him. Interesting.
I don't think he was dead. I think they just strung him up for capture and knocked him out.
I think he's dead.
I think he is dead, but not in that shot. I think he was just knocked out, but I do think he is dead.
Yeah. I think that, like, Obi-Wan's like, man, I'm still not going to be able to do this. And so he just, like, he goes home. But this time, when he looks at his little droid thing, it turns red instead of blue.
Makes that little like noise. I half expected it to make like the Windows noise. So he sees it and he's like, oh no, okay, somebody's here. And then we see a cloaked figure. Oh no, is it who we think it is? Is it her? No. It was a very nice Ahsoka fake out. I remember texting you being like, that was bullshit.
Yeah, a lot of people did think it was Ahsoka. But well, speaking of cameos, a lot of people thought Captain Rex was in the tavern, according to the trailers, in the very beginning of that episode. And it was just some random bald guy. And I was like, come on, guys.
Well, who is it? Who shows up?
It's Senator Bail Organa himself. He literally came to plead his case to Obi-Wan in person. He's like, you know, you are the only one who can do this. And it's like, yeah, no, yeah. And it kind of like snaps Obi-Wan back into action. I think honestly, the fact that Bail risked everything to go see Obi-Wan in person is what made Obi-Wan realize that, like, no, like, Bail is risking everything just to come talk to me about this, because he took he's a senator. They're being followed like crazy.
He even says, if there's anybody I trust with my children, it's you.
Yeah, with my child, it is you. Which that shows, like, hey, that is how desperate he is for them to find Leia. And that really snaps him into action. So then Obi-Wan gets on his EOP and he goes straight into the desert in the middle of the Dune Sea and stops at a spot and starts digging. Now, I thought originally I was like, did he bury a ship out there? Is he digging up his ship, man?
I figured because he had told the other guy to bury it. I liked his little shovel. I thought his little, you know, twisty shovel he had.
I was watching with a buddy, and my buddy's like, that's from Earth. And I'm like, it's all from Earth. Come on now. I was like, listen, the lengths that they go to reuse, like, Earth things in Star Wars, like, the communicators in episode one were ladies' razor blades.
The lightsaber is from, like, a light fixture on a camera.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, come on now. He can have a shovel. It's fine.
Oh, yeah. Shovels don't exist anywhere else.
Yeah, it needed to be a space shovel. But he digs in the desert, and he doesn't dig very deep, but he pulls out a box.
What's in the box?
Inside the box was two lightsabers.
Two, you say?
Yes. Obi-Wan's, and then, of course, the Youngling Slayer 3000 with extended grip.
Oh, God.
A.K.A. Anakin Skywalker's lightsaber.
Yep.
Which I love in Skywalker Saga when Rey picks up that dagger and is like, this thing has done a lot of evil. And it's like, you have the thing that murdered so many children on your
you have no
hip right now.
Idea. Yeah, you have
like,
no
what do you
idea.
Mean? He pulls out the two lightsabers. We don't know what he does with Anakin's.
Yes, we do.
But
not.
we see him put his on his hip.
So then we see him show up to the gate where the transports are usually at. He kind of just stands there, and he's just kind of staring, and he's looking around at everybody. He's watching kids run around. He's watching people do their thing. And he's kind of like having a little bit of an anxiety attack, just a little bit. And all of a sudden, he hears, you coming? And he looks up, and the woman is staring at him like, hey, you gonna get on?
The gate attendant.
Yeah, she's like, what's up, man? You going? And he just kind of looks at her, and he just doesn't really say anything. And then he has the little ticket that was given to him in his hand, and he just starts walking forward to her and is like, obviously, like, yeah, I'm going to go. And then his lightsaber comes out, and he shows it as he's walking by, and I'm like, bro, don't show that. Hide that. But he goes on, and he gets on the transport.
Yep, and that's where we end episode one.
So that is episode one. Before we get to our thoughts, because we have a lot, spoiler alert, a lot of them are positive. Before we get to that, we're going to take a quick break. Okay, so we are back with positive vibes, I basically say. I think for my thoughts with this episode, I'll go first if you don't mind.
Yeah, absolutely, please.
I think cinematically, I'll go cinematically first. I think this was shot really well. The use of lighting, the use of scenes, the way they were, you know, aerials, that kind of stuff. I think they did a really good job. I think some of the CG was a little wonky. Also, aside from the chase sequence being a little bit weird as well, I do think some of the CG was a bit wonky. In the first scene when the Inquisitor ship is showing up, it does a really odd pan when the ship comes into frame and then goes down. It's a very strange pan down. It was a little jarring in the beginning. In the beginning of the episode, they do a recap of episode 1, 2, and 3, which is really cool and got you pumped. I really liked that they used that.
I will say, I wish they had included some Clone Wars stuff too. I understand why they didn't. I would have liked to have seen maybe a little, like, just a couple of little things put in there, which
I would agree.
It makes me think that Ahsoka might not show up after all, just from the fact that she wasn't included in the recap. Because she's a pretty big deal when it comes to the television shows, I feel like, at this point.
I think she's a pretty big deal for both of them in general.
Yeah. And so that's why I'm like, she's a big deal in Kenobi's life. And I'm like, man, this is... It kind of made me a little, like, question whether or not maybe we will see any Clone Wars characters.
I will say this, we haven't recapped episode 2 just yet, but we have both watched episode 2, so get ready.
Yes.
No spoilers at this moment, but there are some Clone Wars references in episode 2.
That is true.
But
not necessarily the Clone Wars,
correct,
as in the television
correct, correct.
Show.
But yeah, I had fun. I think seeing both Leia and Luke was really cool. Clearly, this is a lot more involved in Leia at the moment. We don't know later on the line. We don't know if Luke has a bigger role down the line, but currently we are obviously following Leia. This is going to have to do with her kidnapping in some way. Maybe that is why she knows him in episode 4. She knew who Obi-Wan was, and that's why she knew to contact him. She knew he was Obi-Wan and not Ben or something like that. Like, obviously this has something to do with
it. Yep.
I think the writing was pretty good. The dialogue, some of it was a bit wonky written. I think Reva's dialogue was written. It felt like that was reshoot written. Like, it didn't feel like it was the original, and maybe they did a reshoot.
Mm-hmm.
I think seeing the Inquisitors was cool. I love that. They are now officially canon in terms of live action. I thought that was cool.
Yep, they made the live action debut. I like that.
I don't necessarily think the props and or costuming for them look fairly convincing at points. I could just tell it was, some of it could have been like a reshoot or just.
Well, the other thing too is that when we see the Inquisitors, they're not in their like traditional backdrop.
Yeah,
so that might have been why it looked a little weird, because they were on like, they're on, like, you know, a desert planet, so, you know, big lights, big shining.
Yes. Lots of light will make CG look kind of funky at points.
Yeah, because, I mean, no spoilers for episode 2, but, like, the Inquisitors look better, I think, in episode 2.
Yes,
I see what you're saying, but I think they looked a little better when it was, like, a dark planet, so.
I like the conflict in the Inquisitors. I thought that was cool. I like that their internal conflict. Reva, here's my only thing about Reva, and I will say this also applies to episode 2 for me. Motivation. I think there is a lack of motivation, therefore the anger that they are portraying, that she's showing, I don't know if I could connect with that or have care for that. Like, I don't know if I'm not invested in it because I don't know it. I personally think that Reva is one of the children from the first sequence in this episode, where the kids are escape. I think that Reva is one of them and is either mad at Kenobi for not killing Anakin Skywalker when he had the chance and is like, you know, I was tortured for years because of you. I only decided to be an Inquisitor so I could kill you. Like, I think that's probably what's going to happen.
I think that'll probably develop in the later episodes. Yeah.
So I'm not trying to throw Reva out. I do think that some of the dialogue was a little weird and it just felt more passion rather than logical. And I didn't really think that I cared too much about it. So hopefully I do. I also really liked the Jawa stuff, like having a Jawa, the conversation. I am now part of the conversation because I can understand the conversation. It kind of felt, made me feel like I was part of the conversation. So I thought that was really cool. But yeah, overall, I had a really good time. He has PTSD. Hardcore. He's super depressed, has super high anxiety. This dude is a mental mess. I am here for it. He is the new Peter Parker of Star Wars for me at this moment. He is poor. He is pretty much almost homeless. He's struggling in life. I love it. I'm here for it.
Listen, listen, that cave is better than any one-bedroom apartment you're going to find in LA.
True,
let me
true.
Tell you that.
Or, yeah, in New York, too.
The probably. Rent's probably cheaper, too. It's probably rent-controlled. The landlord probably does all the maintenance on time.
It just, it felt, I remember texting you and I said it felt like episode 3.1.
Yeah.
It really didn't feel like there was much difference from finish. If I watched episode 3 and I instantly jumped into this, it would fit fine, no problem.
Yeah, to piggyback off of you, I think that the style and the direction is... It feels like, yeah, you're jumping right into the next chapter of episode 3, which I think is a big improvement over the issues that Lucasfilm has had ever since giving up or getting bought up by Disney. I mean, if you just have to go on my Twitter to see how much I disagreed with some of their decisions in the past, but it feels like they learned from their mistakes with the sequel trilogy. You know, of not having like anything drawn out, not having a plan, and not, you know, because everything, if you ever talk about the sequel trilogy, people are always like, it doesn't really feel like it fits in the Star Wars universe. You know, it just feels too different. Certain things look too, you know, don't look the same. I completely disagree with some of the newer stuff, like that assessment when it comes to some of the newer stuff that they have made since then. Like Mandalorian, Bad Batch, Clone Wars, this feels like it was made by the, you know, by Lucas circa 2014 in terms of like the fit.
Yeah. So what did you think about the episode in general? Like what are your thoughts?
I love it. I think it's a great start. I think we're setting up for a Logan in space kind of situation. You know, grizzled old veteran Jedi has to go rescue the girl and get her safely to the sanctuary. And it's set up with it perfectly. Like I love seeing Obi-Wan, you know, on Tatooine, eking out a living, not intervening, and he's doing things a Jedi shouldn't because he has to. And I love that. You know, like he's stealing food. He's not confronting someone when he sees injustice. You know, he's telling another Jedi to fuck off so he can stay on his so he can stay undercover. Like I love the fact that he's making these little sacrifices, you know, in order for the sake of the mission. You know, if we look back at the Clone Wars, we see that Obi-Wan's never been afraid to make sacrifices in the name of preserving the Jedi Order. And I think that this, in his mind, this is how the Jedi Order survives, making sure that Luke makes it to adulthood. You know, maybe he's already made the plan of, like, you know, he'll be able to challenge his father one day. Like, maybe he's already thinking that far ahead. Or maybe he's just thinking he'll make it to tomorrow. You know, that's something that we're going to have to wait and see. I mean, we don't even know if he knows about Vader in terms of this first episode. You know, that's still not clear or apparent.
Yeah.
Yeah, the only complaint I had was the sequence of Leia running was a little silly, in my opinion. I thought it looked a little... I feel like they could have shot it a little better. Like maybe tightened in on her while she was running a little bit, because I think the actress who's playing a young Leia is phenomenal. By the way, I think she did a great job of like delivering the mannerisms.
She's the girl in Bird Box.
Oh, is she?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness, I didn't even realize. Yeah, no, she did fantastic. I just felt like she's a little small for a 10-year-old. She seems like she's 6.
Now I did tell you this earlier.
Yes.
IRL in real life. She is 10 years old.
She is 10 years old, right. But yeah, that's the only complaint I think I have for the episode. I thought everything else was delivered the best. Like, I had never thought about it when Bail Organa is like, you know, this girl is just as important as Luke. I was like,
oh yeah.
Yeah, that's 100% true. Like, true. That's something that was never brought up before. It's like, yeah, you know, I love it. She was the backup plan. Like, she was the contingency plan in case Luke couldn't beat, you know, couldn't take down the Emperor. She was the backup. Like Luke's even, or Yoda was even like, nah, we got a backup. We're fine.
It's weird because you would think that the one that gains like a huge education would probably think logically and not more passionate, and so would probably mm-hmm. be more on the light side. And then Luke, being the passionate kid that he is, has almost the same upbringing, kind of, aside from being a slave. He's not a slave, but has like same upbringing as Anakin, like same planet, all that stuff. It's almost like, okay, you got to make sure this time it doesn't happen. So yeah. I think the twins aspect is really interesting to see how the nature versus nurture.
Well, and it makes total sense too, because you know, you raise Luke in solitude and seclusion, and then you raise Leia in opulence and in the public eye. Here's the thing. You know, if you're a conspirator trying to hide a child like this, you know, as far as Darth Vader or as far as the Emperor knows, like, you know, knew, is that Padme was pregnant. They didn't know about the twins aspect. So even if one of them gets found out and killed, they're still the backup. You know, yep. They're still the other one. And it really depended on who got found first. If one of them got found, then the other one was basically guaranteed safety, because they weren't gonna be able to figure out that it was twins, because no one knew it was twins.
Can we please talk about that? You're in this crazy, medically highly advanced, like, civilization, and you don't know that you're having twins? Like,
hey,
she was pretty far along. She gave birth to them. How do you not know that you're going to have twins?
You know, maybe it was one of those things where, like, they didn't want to do the, like, maybe they were like, we don't want the ultrasound. Like, we're going to do this naturally, you know? Like,
they were trying to hide it. She was just like, guys, I just had a big lunch. I'm not.
We don't know the sex of the child. You know, like, those parents that are like, we're going to do a gender reveal party. Maybe her doctor droid knew, and just she was like, oh, don't tell me. I want to be surprised when the baby comes. That droid's like, you're going to be real surprised, lady. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So, I have some predictions. I think that it's going to be good. Those are my predictions, I will say. And I'm not just saying that because I'm excited. Obviously, the last episode, I was bugging out. I was like, oh, my God. I think from seeing this episode, I have hope. I have a new hope. I am ready to go. I am totally ready to go. Yeah. I'm invested. I think the acting, obviously, is good. The shots and sequences are filmed, for the most part, 98%, very well. I like that, you know, the actors are all on board and saying, let's do this. Some of the writing is a little bit hit or miss for me, like dialogue-wise. But other than that, shit looked awesome. This rocked. Yeah. I'm down. Let's go. Also, Flea, like, let's be real here. Come on.
I'm fully invested. For people who said I have only negative thoughts after watching the Halo show, no. You found something that I like.
There you go.
This is it. I'm excited, and I can't wait to talk about episode 2. Well, that about wraps it up. We hope you enjoyed this episode, and if you did, please take a second to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. It really helps us grow the show. If you like sending a link to a friend of yours, that would also help. That's fantastic. Please be sure to connect with us on Twitch, Instagram, and Twitter at lore_party. Thank you guys so much for listening. We will catch you guys next time.